The monologue.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I don't know how I feel about this yet, and I'm leaning in the camp of not being all that outraged, even though I know why some people are outraged. The House of Representatives will be giving staff members in D.C., in their offices, free Peloton memberships. And obviously, it's being paid for by tax dollars. That part makes sense. Any kind of perk as an employee of the federal government is paid for by taxpayers. Same way on the state level, if you work for the state government or city government or county government, tax dollars are going into it. Fox Business got a hold of a draft email from the Office of the Chief Administrative Officer, CAO, and they talk about how this is going to be a premier employee benefit, not just offered to folks who work on the Hill as House staffers, but also to all Capitol Police. It will be the Peloton All Access and a Peloton app membership at no cost. It would start next week. It says beginning May 18th. The contract with Peloton will be offered to about 10,000 people on staff working for the House of Representatives, plus the 2,300 Capitol Police officers. They say the contract is a $10,000 upfront payment to Peloton, plus a $10 a month charge for every single staffer or officer that ends up utilizing the benefit. They say if 12,000 staffers took advantage of the benefit, it would cost taxpayers $120,000 a month. Now, obviously, not all 12,000 staff members will be taking advantage of this benefit. In fact, I sincerely doubt you get into about 20-25%. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say you get 25% membership. At $10 a month, you got the $10,000 upfront payment. Okay. Now, they point out on Fox Business that an all-access membership costs you and I $40 or $39 a month, and the app membership at $12.99 a month. The email sent from the office of the CAO told the staffers and officers they would, quote, have access to thousands of live and on-demand classes, blah, 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 blah. Peloton can confirm that this is happening. They're extending their corporate wellness program to all staff and Capitol police. And obviously, this special pricing that they're getting is because sheer numbers of people that it would be offered to. Any large corporation, any large business, and probably they have this version for small businesses as well, depending, again, on the number of employees, you're going to get a little bit of discount. It's like shopping at Costco. You don't pay the equivalent of buying 10 gallon jugs of mayo. You get the 10 gallon jug of mayo for a deeply discounted price because you're buying it in bulk. I don't think this is all that big of a deal. And I know, you know, the part of the framing around this, and I think this is fair. The framing is that we're going to get hit with the cost of this during inflation, but businesses, including our government, should be offering perks that are reasonable, that keep people healthy and engaged in the job. I don't know if this is that big of a deal. First of all, I'm not going to pretend that when we're talking about the governmental budget, that this is a significant item. It's not a significant item. Now, the symbolism, maybe you can complain. And I do think that the optics of this look bad. But first of all, Hill staffers and Capitol Police don't get paid what you think they get paid. These are not super high paid positions. Now, some of them are, depending, again, on which office you're in. But, you know, if you are in the office of Dan Newhouse or even Pramila Jayapal, you're not bringing in hundreds of thousand dollars a year. You're not getting paid all that much. This is merely one of the perks to keep people a little bit more engaged. And wouldn't you want our staff members and Capitol Police officers to be more engaged and enjoy where they work? This one, for me, is not a controversy. I get the optics of it. Believe me, I do. And I know that there are a lot of people who can't afford to get a Peloton membership, let alone the Peloton bike, because of inflation. But the staff members there, the ones who are working hard in the offices and the Capitol Police, they're not the ones who created this stagnant and inflationary environment. it's the Democrat lawmakers. Now, yes, a lot of the staff members obviously work on policies on behalf of the Democrat lawmakers, but this is going to everyone, not just Democrats. It's going to the Republicans, and again, it's going to the Capitol Police. I don't think this is that big of a deal, but I'd love to hear from you. Let me know. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Now this. Calling the Pledge of Allegiance antiquated, members of the Bremerton City Council are getting rid of the pledge before meetings. They are also claiming that it's about streamlining the process, but really they're saying that it's not inclusive. On top of that, they're getting rid of the invocation. This is, of course, absolutely absurd, and they're doing it without even bothering to get community input. Joining me on the line is someone who's got a lot to say about this, State Representative Jesse Young, the Republican from Gig Harbor. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason, it's good to be with you.
When you saw that this was even something that they were going to officially move forward with, what went through your head?
The word garbage? I mean, that's what this is. It's utter garbage. It's political posturing for the sake of pushing a radical progressive agenda that is ultimately and utterly divisive to our country. It's garbage, Jason.
And the funny thing is, one of the council members used similar language explaining why they want to get rid of it. They think, according to Councilmember Quinn Dennehy, said, "I think it's actually detrimental to what America really does stand for."
You know, this is interesting. The first thing I ever did in the legislature as an appointee was pass a resolution that was unanimously supported by Republicans and Democrats to honor the United States flag. And here we are just 9 years later, and now they're coming out saying and conflating a Pledge of Allegiance to a scary rise in nationalism and calling it unpatriotic. They know what they're doing. They know that they are line-stepping to the utter degree, trying to obfuscate what they're doing and hiding behind a progressive push to alienate average Americans that just want to go about their business and love their country.
What should the community do in response?
Well, I'm advocating right now that all of the elected officials from the legislative level, and specifically my state senator, stand up, call these guys, especially since she's a Democrat and these guys are all Democrats, call them up and say, hey, you at least need to follow what the mayor of the city said and give people a chance to voice their opinion, because they want to hold this next meeting with no public comment. And they just want to vote it out. And I think that people should hit them up on social media. I think people should inundate their phone lines there at the city hall and let them know that we don't stand for this. This is a Navy town. Bremerton has the Naval Shipyard in it. And they know that they're specifically alienating veterans because they're trying to carve out apparently a once-a-year exemption where they would say the pledge on Veterans Day. Well, that clearly tips your hand that you know you're doing this in spite of the fact that it's going to alienate all of your veterans, all of our service members, and all of their families.
Yeah.
This is utter garbage, Jason.
They know exactly what they're doing. I think you're right. And you're calling out specifically Senator Emily Randall, wanting her to step up. She is the state senator for this district, of which you're the state representative. Obviously, Michelle Caldier, the other Republican state rep who is in this district. I mean, obviously, you two are on the same page. I'd love to know what Senator Randall has to say about this. I'd love to know where she stands on this. I know she's not going to take a stance. I know she won't come on this show to talk about it, but I would love to hear her argue why this is the right move.
I'm sure she's going to do the same thing she did when it came to standing up for our police. She's going to walk away from it, avoid it, and our families and our communities are going to be hurt. And while she continues to post pictures on Facebook of how friendly she is when she walks her dog during state committee hearings, It's utter garbage how they want to pretend and put a smile on one side of their face while they're literally kicking the average American right in the gut on just normal, everyday unifying things in our country, like standing up for a flag or just the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, and the other issue here is the invocation is being taken out as well.
You know what's funny? We hear this all the time, like separation of church and state, which is not in our Constitution, never has been. You know, our founding fathers were very clear about the need for morals in our country and how that was a bedrock of the underlying of our constitutional framework, our checks and balances. Interestingly, every day on the floor of the House, we open session in prayer. It's been that way since the beginning of our state. This is a normal, everyday thing, a common occurrence, and yet the the city council here is trying to purport it as somehow antiquated. It's garbage, man. And I think that people need to be aware of it, because everything is going so far to the left now that these guys are feeling confident that they can publicly push an agenda like this that's going to remove any sort of historical precedent from the public square if it had anything to do with morals or unifying or patriotism to our country.
If you guys live in Bremerton and you're listening right now, it's on you. You need to step up. You need to call this out. You need to flood their phone line and email inboxes civilly, but make sure they know that you do not stand for this. This is utterly disturbing and disgusting. We've been talking with State Representative Jesse Young, Republican. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, Jason.
Now this.
The Monologue.
Kat Kamick, the congresswoman from Florida, friend of the show, really great representative. Every time I interview her, I try to convince her to move to Washington State so we can benefit, or at least trade. We'll give Pramila Jayapal to Florida for a bit, and we'll take Kat Kamick just for a month. So she posted photos on and video on her social media accounts yesterday and a day before. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, of pallets of baby formula that have been delivered and are being utilized at different locations, it would appear, certainly for one, the Ursula Detention Center in Texas, detention center, meaning that they're the ones who are housing people in this country illegally. So illegal immigrants are gaining access to baby formula when, unfortunately, here for people who actually are legal citizens, actual residents of the United States, they're having a really hard time finding the formula, and she is rightly outraged. She was on Fox and Friends today.
Earlier in the week, I had received a text message from several different border agents sending me pictures and videos of stocked warehouses, pallets of baby formula. These agents themselves have families, and they have family members that can't get this baby formula in the stores in Texas and Arizona, New Mexico, yet they go to work and they're unloading pallets of baby food out of the back of tractor trailers. It's outrageous. If you have to sum it up, this is exactly what America Last looks like. Meanwhile, moms across the country are panicking. They can't get their hands on formula. And as you said, 40% across the country is out. In my state, close to 50% of baby formula is out, and that's in Florida and several other states.
Now, here in Washington, we are one of the few states that have been hit particularly hard. There are seven states that have either more than 40 or more than 50% down in this baby formula crisis. And, you know, I took the photo. It's now getting shared a little bit more on Fox News and on Twitter of just the Walgreens in Seattle. It was almost completely empty. No baby formula. And if you are a parent who needs to supplement or use this as the main way to feed your kid, for example, if you have a kid who has very specific dietary issues, if you've got a situation where you're a foster parent and obviously you're not able to just breastfeed on demand when you weren't pregnant, this actually matters to you. And that it's deemed controversial to point out that we should be giving baby formula to Americans before we give it to folks who are in this country illegally, when they have the option, the U.S. government, to return folks back to where they came from as they're trying to get in here illegally. Is absurd. It's not controversial. Now, a congressman, Troy Nels, basically said that. It said baby formula, he said it on Twitter, baby formula should go to Americans before illegals. And you would think that that is a controversy. In fact, he goes on to say in the Twitter feed, this should not have to be said. He's correct. It shouldn't have to be said. It's absurd that we have to say it. But we have to say it because there are the dumbest people alive on Twitter, like John Legend, who is so ignorant when it comes to political issues, social issues. He is so far to the left. And of course, he takes issue. He tweeted, these are the pro-life folks, and he put pro-life in air quotes. It's just so dumb. It is not a smart comment. It is a comment that comes out of an ideological stubbornness. It is not controversial to prioritize Americans over illegal immigrants. We are not saying that the life of an illegal immigrant is not important. We are saying that we are supposed to, in this country, take care of our citizens. And you've got folks who have no respect for the law coming into this country illegally, and they're being treated better than Americans who have been paying their taxes, following the laws, being productive members of society, who are being told, now, not only do you have to deal with the inflationary crisis, not only do you have to deal with an economy that is not thriving the way it should be, but now we're going to say you don't get easy access to baby formula for your child because we're more interested in protecting people who are in this country illegally. Give me a break that's controversial to want Americans to be prioritized. Do you think any other country would do something like this? No. But this is a Democrat Party and a Biden administration that puts everybody first except Americans. We are always last with this administration. And I shouldn't be too shocked that folks are taking this position when it harms American babies because, hey, guess what? The Democratic Party is all about that abortion lifestyle. Now this.
The interview.
It is a crowded field of Republicans vying to challenge the incumbent Dan Newhouse in Washington's 4th Congressional District. Joining me on the line is one of those candidates, Ben Garcia. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jason, and to all your listening audience. Thank you very much for giving me your time.
Absolutely. Obviously, there are a lot of folks who are running. Give us the elevator pitch as to why you are the best candidate.
Well, first and foremost, I want to go ahead and talk about what Dan Newhouse hasn't done. He hasn't done enough to protect our freedoms, and he really hasn't done in the years he's been off as our congressional candidate here at the 4th District enough to really make an impact for our small farmers and our businesses, and how he hasn't stood up enough for our rights. You know, take a look. He supported H.R. 550, which is COVID database. You know, so he doesn't really believe in our freedoms individually. He made promises when he first ran to LaVos. He said he would support DACA and whatnot. He broke those promises. He's also hasn't improved on our H2 program. Take a look, year after year after year, our 4th district struggles with getting workers to be able to come and work our agriculture needs, which are our largest private employer in the 13th district, in our 4th district, and is the 13th gross domestic product overall in our state.
What would you do specifically on that issue? So for folks who are wondering, H2, we're talking about the temporary agricultural workers.
Well, what I would do first and foremost is trying to go ahead and increase the numbers, work more with the farmers, and take a look at increasing the food cost for them. And what I mean that instead of having $15 a day, we would go ahead and increase the per diem more so we can take away a little bit more of the cost from the farmer and bringing those workers over here for our needs.
Well, one of the issues that's just facing the agricultural industry, as it were, and just farms in general, is just the rising cost of doing business. You've got the supply chain crisis, right? And then you've got the fertilizer issue.
Yeah, you do. You take a look at fertilizer issue. Last year, you were looking at about $282 per acre for fertilizer. Due to the facts that are happening in Ukraine and whatnot, and a weak administration, to be honest, you're looking at that cost at about $900 and some for fertilizer. We need to be able to really take the gorilla off the backs of our small farmers and our ranchers in order to go ahead to do our own products here in America and alleviate those costs. And we also need to take a look what's happening with our foreign policy and our we need to be energy independent. You know, all these factors that aren't, you know, too difficult to fix, but you've got an administration and you've got Democrat leadership that completely believes in continuing to bury our small farmers. They're not watching out for us.
Yeah, they don't have an understanding of needs of farmers at all.
Take a look at Bloomberg, who was a presidential candidate. he went ahead and said, all you have to do is just plant the seed, do a little digging, and all of a sudden you're going to have food. Well, you know what? Mr. Bloomberg may be a multi-billionaire, but he certainly doesn't understand what it takes to go ahead and plant and provide food and wealth for the rest of the world. Take a look at how much we help on other countries. When we bring in workers from other countries, we are helping their economic system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of people that truly don't understand the critical needs to protect our small farmers and our way of life. This 4th District is a special way of life, I can tell you. And that's why I'm defending it. And that's why I will be your next U.S. Congressman in the 4th Congressional District.
Whenever I hear from any of the candidates who are running, and we only have about 30 seconds left, we've got Lauren Culp, we've got Brad Klipper, Jared Sessler, Doug White. They all basically say, you know, vote for me because I'm going to really care for this district. Dan Newhouse is a rhino or some version of that. So
yeah.
It's likely that Dan Newhouse makes it, obviously, to the general election. So why should someone vote for you over the other challengers? 30 seconds.
Okay, first, the only combat veteran that's in this race. I am the only one that served in combat. I worked for 10 years with the federal government as an underwriter. Done over $200 million in loans. Over 1,000 people are homeowners because of me. My life has been about service and dedication to making a difference in my community. I've worked in the school systems, and I also want to be tough on violence. And I'll tell you, I saved a life this weekend. The shooting that happened at the Cinco de Mayo, I saved that individual's life who was then from Vancouver. And finally, I am the only candidate that is suing in the U.S. courts against the racial gerrymandering that happened in the 15th district. And I've got two lawsuits protecting our Constitution. So in every way, I have made a difference. I have saved lives. I have gone to combat to protect our way of life. And you can trust me to make that difference when I represent you in Washington, D.C.
To learn more about this race, head on over to VoteBenGarcia.com. VoteBenGarcia.com. He is running against Dan Newhouse. Ben, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story and joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The Washington 8th Congressional District race is up for grabs. Kim Schreier, who's a doctor, in case you didn't know it, is a Democrat who's really a Seattle progressive representing an area that is considerably more red than blue. But how does Roe v. Wade throw a wrench into the race? Obviously, with the what seems to be the inevitable overturning of Roe v. Wade, it turns women's rights and reproductive health, as the left will constantly talk about it, it throws that into the mix in a way that maybe some folks didn't expect. Joining me on the line is one of the Republican candidates running. Matt Larkin joins me now. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jason. Good to be here.
So first, big picture, how do you think the overturning of Roe v. Wade changes things on the ground in Washington 8?
Well, and that's just it, Jason. It's not going to change it at all. It's just not. It throws it back to the states, and Washington is a very strongly pro-choice state. And a lot of people don't realize that. You see the scare tactics from the far left saying, oh, it's going to really affect people in Washington state. It's not. We have a trigger law here. That says if Roe's ever overturned, abortion rights are codified in Washington state. So it's really not a big deal. All you hear is the scare tactics saying that, well, it'll increase abortions coming over the state lines, abortion-seeking refugees from places like Idaho. That's where we're at. And I've heard statistics from far, far left groups saying over 300% increase in people flooding into our abortion centers. It's scare tactics.
Well, what's funny is I don't even know if that's a scare tactic per se, because it sounds more like that's what Democrats here want, which is to provide more abortions. It is kind of weird. I think they're going to love playing hero here.
Yeah, they do. They like the role of hero, and I think you're right. But what they're trying to say is, everybody get ready. This will really affect you. But it won't. The bottom line is it won't.
Will it affect the race in the fact that you're going to be asked about this constantly if you are the nominee? And obviously, Kim Schreier is going to say that she stands up for women's rights, blah, blah, blah. The media will present you as evil because you are pro-life. That will have some impact.
I think it will. will. I certainly do find irony in the fact, though, that she's not only a doctor, Jason, as you have pointed out, and I wasn't aware.
She's a doctor?
I'm sure a lot of people.
She's really? What kind of doctor? I did not know that.
But the irony is she's a pediatrician.
Yeah.
So I think we have the ability to use a little bit of that momentum against her in the fact that, look, if science is continually proving that these are little tiny breathing, feeling, smiling human beings in the womb, you should be doing everything you can to protect them. And I think that's the case we make. And I think we make it in good faith. And I think we're on the right side of history here. I'll be called whatever names they want to call me for sticking up for the most voiceless in our society, the unborn. And so you got to be ready as the candidate to move through the primary, which is going to be me, to take those bullets. You do. You have to be ready to take those hits. You can't try to be best friends with mainstream media outlets sometimes because you know what they're going to say about you. But I do think at the end of the day, voters will come back to issues that affect them the most directly. And I think by November, they'll be focusing on things like record inflation, 8.3% mm-hmm. inflation, 40-year highs. They'll be gas prices aren't going down, I'll tell you that. It'll be costing them $150 or more to fill up their tank every day. These are kitchen table issues that they're going to be dealing with, and it actually impacts their daily budgets and their daily lifestyles. And I think those are the things that they're going to be focused on way more directly than talking about Roe being overturned.
There's been some controversy criticism, of Reagan Dunn, who's a King County council member who is also running in the district for Washington's 8th congressional Republican nominee. He voted in favor or against this sort of support for Roe v. Wade when it came up as a symbolic vote with the council, yet he is pro-choice. He's talked about it in slightly different terms than a pro-choice person would talk about abortion. He says he takes a more libertarian position on it, which is the government just have no role. And usually you don't hear the language from the pro-choice folks talking about it as a libertarian. Be that as it may, he took the vote on the county council the same way you would have. But it's a little bit of a contradiction in his position. Are you critical of that?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised by it. I think it was largely a symbolic vote, as you point out. It was a vote essentially against virtue signaling. In other words, it was a safe vote for him to make. He's a career politician, and, you know, he's always been very openly pro-choice. He said that in our debate, actually.
Yeah.
He said he draws the line at partial birth abortion, but not any earlier. So I happen to strongly disagree with him on that. And you know what? I'm going to continue to fight for the rights of the unborn. But right now we need someone who's not wishy-washy on this issue. We need a leader. We need someone who's going to have a true north in their compass and know where they stand, for better or worse. And again, I'm convinced that we are on the right side of history on this issue. And I'll continue to say that, and I'll continue to be genuine and honest about that.
So a new poll came out. We're talking with Matt Larkin. He's running for Congress. His website is Larkin, the number four, Congress.com. Larkin4Congress.com. New poll came out with Unleash Washington. It shows the two front runners being Jesse Jensen, who's, I think, like 2 or 3 points behind Reagan Dunn. You're number three. I think you came in at about 16% of the vote, not far behind the other two. But how do you, if you believe that this poll is representative of the district, how do you gain some ground in the coming weeks?
Sure. Well, I guess that's the key. I'm not necessarily sure that it's representative of the district, but we're talking about from first place to where I came in, about 250 votes in a district with 800,000 voters. So, I have tons of friends and supporters who called me the next day, said, "Oh, man, I forgot to vote," or "Why didn't I know about this poll?" So it's not super accurate of the electorate at large. And in fact, if straw polls were accurate, JC, we'd have Michelle Bachmann as our nominee for president in 2012. So we've known all along this race is a jump ball. We've got internal data on our side showing that it's anyone's race at this point. And I'm out there hustling. I'm out there talking to voters. I'm getting my conservative message out there directly to them. I'm going door to door. I'm talking to people. I'm going to every event I can. And we're getting the volunteers. They're flooding to my campaign because they realize I'm the true conservative with the ability to win this race. And in fact, we're gaining momentum. I just announced yesterday that I got endorsed by the Washington Young Republicans. I got endorsed by the Pierce County Republican Party. We've got Adam Fortney, the sheriff of Snohomish County, King County Councilwoman Kathy Lambert supporting me, the Seattle Police Guild, the Pierce County Sheriff. And these are all big endorsements, and there's a lot more that I'm not listing. But we've got momentum, and we're going to continue to build on that. We're going to continue to raise money and start spending here pretty soon to get our name ID even higher. But I ran in 2020 statewide, and that's going to help me too, especially going into Election Day. And the fact that I won the 8th Congressional in 2020 with over 51% of the vote is an important fact to point out. We're going to win it again in 2022.
The last question for you. At the end of the day, I think it's reasonable for voters to look at the three front runners on the Republican side and say, well, there are some differences. Overall, there's way more similarities. So why? What's the final pitch for you to the voters that would hold that position?
Well, I think I just covered a lot of it, right? I've got a lot of momentum on our side.
But everyone says that. All the candidates say they have momentum on the issues. If someone virtually believes that virtually every issue, you guys are very similar, and that is true. You are very similar across the board. What would be in your background that makes you the standout candidate?
Sure. Well, I've worked for the President of the United States, Jason. I've been in tough Oval Office meetings at the highest levels of government. I'm a former prosecutor. I've been the only one who owns a business. We own a manufacturing company here in Washington State in the 8th Congressional District. We employ over 600 people. I get it. I am in the fight with business owners, small and large and medium. I understand how hard it is to do business in this state, and I understand how hard it is to raise a family in this state as the father of four little kids, 12 and under. I mean, my wife and I are in this fight, and we're fighting for things like taking back our education choices. We're fighting for things like making crime illegal again. I've been on Fox News a handful of times talking about my campaign slogan, make crime illegal again. It's catching national press because people want to know what is going on out in Washington. You are great at talking about it, too, so good for you. But I am doing a multi-pronged attack with you talking about the reason that we can't go into our parks or into our cities anymore, the crime and the homelessness and the needles that are on our sidewalks. Mm-hmm. This is outrageous, and I'm all about fighting for these things, and I think that's why I did so well in 2020. That's why I won the 8th district, because I am talking about issues that people care about, and I bring the unique perspective of a father of four young kids, a business owner, and a background in federal government. I'm a lawyer, too. I went to Gonzaga for law school. So these are things that I bring that are unique, and I'm going to double down on that, and we're going to keep getting out there and hustling, and we're going to get our message out there, and we are going to win this primary, and then we're going to go on and beat Tim Schreier.
There you go. The website is Larkin4Congress.com. Larkin4Congress.com. Matt Larkin, thank you so much for stopping by.
Jason, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Again, Larkin4Congress.com. Now this.
The Jason Rance Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rance. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rance is in focus now.
Jason Rance, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So there's an issue of tiny home villages that continuously get covered by the media. The media here likes the idea of tiny home villages, and the very concept of putting homeless people into tiny home villages, I have no problem with. I think actually it's a smart move. It can be. Unfortunately, it's become not so smart moves because the folks who are in charge of running these programs unfortunately don't really enforce rules in a meaningful way. There are folks who very clearly are stealing and bringing back their stolen goods into the tiny home villages. There is rampant drug use and alcohol use, which, of course, does not get these folks treated for why they're out on the streets to begin with. I have witnessed this many, many, many times. And really, they don't even hide it. The Low-Income Housing Institute, LIHI, seems to be getting some momentum because now we're hearing from different church leaders in the area saying, oh, we would love to sponsor on our property these tiny home villages. Right now, we've got, I believe it's 17. The last one that opened was in Rainier Beach or South Seattle. And a lot of the money there was funded by philanthropic dollars. But, of course, government dollars are going into it as well. And so you've got Pastor Henry Jenkins in Tukwila talking to Como TV, giving an indication that, oh, you know, we're very open to getting this here.
We've been asking for that for years now. We hosted tent cities for several years.
And that's actually Jan Boulder Jackie. Unfortunately, I guess we missed the Pastor Henry Jenkins. There's lots of pastors who are taking these positions. How about that? Although I will say that in the article, Pastor Jenkins says, hey, we're having some remodeling going on right now in our church. We'd be happy to allow for a tiny home village to go up in the parking lot behind our church as we're doing this. Michael Williams is a retired military veteran, and he told Como TV that it would be amazing to get people back into society with this kind of stability.
For even me as a vet, it's hard for me to get into a place. But if we can provide tiny homes for those that really want it, help people get on their feet, get jobs, let them save up money so they can get into their own place, that would be fantastic.
It would be fantastic if it worked, and maybe it would work for Michael. Maybe it would work for some other folks. But the fact of the matter is, you're not seeing the results that we were promised. Every single time I ask Lehigh for specific data on people who go into a tiny home village and then get into permanent housing, I never get an answer. Never. I don't think I've ever gotten any of the data. I get promises of the data coming, and then I get silence. I get ghosted. Ghosted by this guy, Josh Castle, with Lehigh. And he says, look, I know some people might have an issue with these tiny home villages in their communities.
Now they're able to be in a tiny house where they can turn on the heat, they can lock the door to secure their possessions, they get some dignity and privacy and autonomy, and they work with case management to get into permanent housing.
So in other words, look at all of these benefits and stop complaining about some of the downsides, like an increase in crime or an increase in homeless people who are coming into the area thinking they'll be able to get into the tiny home village that they aren't actually qualified to get into as of that point, because maybe they're already full. And guess what? Some of those homeless people don't end up leaving. They stay in your neighborhoods. And sometimes they commit crimes. Sometimes, due to their addiction or a mental health issue, it poses a safety issue that I know a lot of people want to pretend doesn't actually exist. But I'm not going to pretend that. It does exist, and it is serious. It is real. And no one wants to talk about it. Instead, they just go down this road constantly, telling us about how, oh, it's the right thing to do for these people, but they never show us the results in any meaningful way about how it works. And they try to make you feel bad for wanting answers.
The Last Rant.
And I will say this, it is not on us to simply shut up, shut down, stop pushing back because someone tells us, well, it's the right thing to allow for these tiny home villages in your communities. Don't be a NIMBY. No, I'm not being a NIMBY. I'm just being a responsible citizen, a responsible member of my community who isn't going to listen to a whole bunch of PR work on your behalf trying to convince me that your plan will work when you haven't explained why it will work or how it's worked in the past. We get these sort of proclamations of, oh, it gives people all this kind of security and stability, and that's what gets people on their feet. Well, on paper, that makes sense to me. Sure. But are you treating them for their mental health issues? Are you treating them for their addiction? Or are you allowing them to continue to use on your property? Well, we have rules. You can't openly flout the rules. Yes, but the second that they go into their tiny home villages, they end up shooting up or smoking fentanyl. And you pretend that it's not happening. Although, again, if anyone visits any of these villages or talks to the people who live there, it's very clear that it's happening. Oh, well, you know, we don't police people who are in their private homes. You can go home for all we know and smoke fentanyl. I suppose I could do that. Yes, that's true. It's certainly possible. I mean, I'm not, but let's just go with it. Am I the one who's living out on the streets? Am I the one not paying rent, or am I paying rent? Am I breaking the law outside of smoking fentanyl in my home? Are people complaining about it even? Or do you not even know because I'm otherwise functioning in society? That's the difference here. I'm not homeless. I'm paying my bills, and I am playing by the rules, and others are not. And you are enabling that behavior. And so my rant to you is, do not allow yourself to be bullied, including if a church is doing it or any place of worship. Make sure that you are demanding that there's a safety plan, that you actually see what the plan is to get people into permanent housing. What is considered success? If it's merely a success if you get someone into the tiny home, dare I say that's not success? Dare I say that's just the homeless industrial complex doing what it does best, which is stay in business forever, with some people getting awfully rich off of other people's misery. And just because a church is involved doesn't mean it's the right thing. So if this is happening in your church, make sure you're asking the right questions. And also, make sure you have a great weekend. That's The Last Rants.